The themes and the content discussed in this programme may be of an adult nature. It is not suitable for younger ears.
Live and local.
After the Watershed.
Good evening.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
Sounding good, I reckon.
She's got a new microphone, people.
Oh, finally. How long has it taken? 18 months?
It suits you, though.
Thank you.
I mean, size isn't everything.
Well,
that's what we tell people.
That's what we tell them.
But actually, when it comes to microphones, it makes all the difference.
Baby, look at me. I mean, let's just hope the content that comes out of my beautiful mouth is worthy of this gorgeous mic.
And that content tonight involves great sex over the age of 50.
Yeah.
There's been an awful lot in the press recently about how the more sex you have, the more likely you are to delay the menopause.
Now they tell us.
I know, that seems like a good enough reason to get it on, doesn't it? But I do think for a long time, and I know the tide is changing on this, but I do think for a long time there has been this assumption that sex belongs to the young.
Yeah. Yeah, and thank the Lord that's changing. Mm. And I think it is a recent change, actually. And I do wonder what that's about. I think we're going to go into this a lot, but you know how much I love Twitter. I really think social media is a real leveler about this. I think that people don't really care about your age on it. So it opens up whole new people to you. And then you just discover new people and discover that actually 50 means nothing.
Mm. And also, what 50 used to be
is not
years
now.
Ago is completely different from what it is now.
Jennifer Lopez, Elle Macpherson,
I mean, hello.
Bebe Lynch.
Those three names always go together.
Live and local.
After the Watershed.
And we know that certain over 50s are getting it. Hotel room. She still hasn't divulged, but I'll find out sooner.
One day, lady.
Rather than later. Don't you worry. Now, I don't know if you saw this article recently in...
Did I write it?
You didn't write it, my darling. This was one that didn't have
then
your
I
name
didn't,
to
then
it.
Then I didn't bother with it.
It involved a local councillor.
What?
Yeah, a councillor from Littlehampton. And you know how I love a local story.
And you...
yes, and this particular lady, 59, was in this article waxing lyrical about her sex life. And supporting this research, which suggests that regular sex might help to defer the menopause. So she popped into a clothing store in Epsom. And yes, I've looked it up. We can visit next weekend. Looking for a barber jacket. I love that level of detail. And bumped into a young man called Jack, 39. 20-year age difference.
Wow.
Who cares? They got it on.
Yeah.
And the rest we'll go into later. But yes, she was a big advocate of this idea that sex can be fabulous over the age of 50, as is our next guest.
So our next guest, you know, we don't like to give people an introduction.
No.
Because we like to be, you know, the most important people here. But can I say something about our next guest? Because she is extraordinary. It's Tracy Cox. She's one of the world's foremost writers on sex and relationships. Me and you have discussed Tracy's work before. She's been writing, researching and talking about sex for 30 years, has toured the world as an international sex, body language and relationship expert, has written bestsellers, including Hot Sex, How to Do It, has her own product range. We need to talk about this with Love Honey, because it's for older, it's sex toys for older people, which I think is brilliant. And she's written a new book, Great Sex Starts at 50, How to Age Proof Your Libido. Hello, Tracy Cox.
Hello, Mrs.
Hello,
Sex.
Tracy, thank you.
Wow. Don't you know about sex?
Tracy knows it all. Tracy, was your surname Cox before you started on this journey?
No, it's nominative determinism, isn't it?
Isn't it?
To write about sex without surname. So many people over the years have said, you know, what is your real name? It's like, do you honestly think I would have come up with something a bit more original? Anyway, never mind.
How did you get into all of this?
I think it's probably because when I was about 16, my older sister, who was 4 years older than me, was involved with family planning. She was a nurse, and she would be constantly bringing back these pamphlets like how to put on a condom and how to do all this. And I actually hadn't even had sex at that point, but I sort of became a bit like sex education. I was like OSIS. I was the person at the school that everyone came to ask about all their sex problems. And then it sort of went from there. I went on and did a career in psychology. My dad and mum split up, and it seemed very clear to me that it was a case of sex versus love, so I became fascinated with that whole dynamic. And then I did journalism, went to became editor of Cosmopolitan magazine in Australia, and then ended up freelance writing and making it my specialty, really. So that's how I ended up here.
I'm intrigued by that bit about your parents. Yeah, I mean, most of us can't even think about our parents and sex in the same sentence, and you there
you
said
kind
you
of
know,
have to, don't you, when that happens.
So when you say you kind of realised it was
marrying
sex,
her, so it obviously was a bit of love as well, but it was, I just found that whole psychology of love and sex and lust and everything competing against each other quite, well, I suppose I was really scarred by it. I ended up in therapy because of it, but it is fascinating, isn't it, what makes people do things and how powerful that desire, that sexual desire can be to make you leave. I mean, we know how powerful it is. Men have left their countries and, you know, God knows what else. So yeah, it's fascinating.
One of your chapters, we're going to get into the whole, these chapters are extraordinary. I want to talk second of all, about chapter one, the four things that will revolutionise your sex life, because they're so basic and brilliant. Yeah. It's so like, yeah, of course. But you do have one of your chapters about affairs, yours, theirs, and dealing with the fallout, like it's assumed. Do you think it's inevitable?
No, I don't think affairs are inevitable. I think that I think what's inevitable is the fact that you will, I mean, I can't remember who said it, but somebody very, very wise said, you, during the course of a good marriage, you fall in love with other people about four times over a period of long time. And I think that that's probably quite true, in that we and when you act on that, it's a completely different thing. But I think we all get little obsessions and attractions, and then it depends on, you know, it's your commitment to the commitment, whether or not you sort of play out on that, whether you do something about that. So I don't think they're inevitable, but I think having feelings for other people might be.
What made you write the book?
Well, this is my 17th book, and I honestly thought that I'd written everything there was to know. And you've got another one. I was like, what else can I say? Come on now. But then I hit 50 myself, and I had a very lively libido, and it kind of just disappeared. And I was shocked, actually. I just thought, that's not going to happen to me of all people. And it did happen to me. And then I realized that, in fact, you know what? You're dealing with a whole different scenario. Sex before 50 and sex after 50 are completely different beings, in some in good ways and some in bad ways. But most of it's solvable. And I do think most of the women I know are having better sex now than they were before. But there's certainly a lot of hurdles you have to climb over.
I think I was saying earlier to Bibi, I think things are changing, though, you know, certainly when it comes to the perception of, you know, the fact that women over 50 can still be hugely sexual.
I remember,
though, when I first started on the radio, whenever any conversation would come up about sex for the over 50s, there was always one phrase that would be bandied around again and again and again. Vaginal dryness. I blame Jenny Eclair in some part for this obsession. But let's deal with the kind of the physical side first then. I mean, you said your libido dropped off at the age of 50.
Yes.
What can you do about things like that?
Well, I mean, it is inevitable, because what happens is the three sex hormones that influence desire trickle away, basically. Your production level falls because Mother Nature's got no point to them. I have to say, before I even go into that, there is a whole school of thought that says it's actually attitude and your attitude towards your body that affects your sex drive much more than these hormones leaving your body. So there is that as well, which I talk about a lot in the book. But so estrogen is the main one. So that basically drops to nothing. So that means vaginal dryness. It means your skin looks awful. It means you're irritated. You can't sleep. It means that your desire for sex falls, your natural desire for sex, a spontaneous desire. So what you can do, I mean, HRT is made out to be the big baddie. I think most people know now it's not. For some people, can't take it, of course. But for most people, if you do it sensibly, it does make one hell of a lot of difference. Another thing that makes a hell of a lot of difference is estrogen pessaries that you insert. Now, if you estrogen topically put, you know, put into the position, is not going to cause any problems. So that's one of the safest ways to do it. And they make a huge difference. There's tons and tons of things that you can do to combat the menopausal symptoms. And if you go to your GP, do a hell of a lot of research online, you can pretty much calm most of them down to a point point where you can live with them. And it doesn't last forever. You just can go through this period and come out the other side.
Do you think women sometimes worry, though, about going to the GP with this kind of issue, particularly if it's a male GP, you know, and to sit there and say, look, I want to improve my sex life?
I think the issue with a lot of GPs, sorry, Tracy, is that they're not up on the HRT stuff. So they actually still believe that erroneous study that was produced in Sweden, was it, Tracy, like a million years
ago? Like 26 people or something. It was ridiculous.
And that's the study that all the bad news is based on.
I think if that's the case, you can ask to see another GP. And I mean, if you have the cash, I would honestly splash out and have a one-off visit to a gynecologist if you're really seriously suffering. Or there are tons of menopause clinics around. I mean, if you look around, there are lots of alternatives if your GP is useless. And, you know, like I said, you can ask to see another one and maybe you've got a bit more luck. Or if he's that useless, then ask for a referral to a gynecologist. They're more, if they're so embarrassed to talk about sex or the menopause, they'll more than happily shove you off. So just do that instead. Or do your own research is what I would say. It is, of course, it's easy. You know, you don't want to go into your doctor who's, you know, gives you cold prescriptions and say, look, actually, my vagina's really dry. It's not the conversation we all want to have, but you just have to have it.
Ali would mime it. You love to mime,
I love
Ali.
I love a game of charades. Me.
Tracy, so talking about, so there's the symptoms there that we can talk about and the menopausal stuff. What do you think about that study that came out that did say the more sex you have, the you're likely to delay the menopause? Do you think there's any truth in that?
Yes, of course there would be. I mean, I'm not a medical person, I have to hasten to say. But, I mean, this whole thing that you have to, post 50, one of the most important messages of the book is use it or lose it. Now, you have to have regular sex in order to keep everything functioning. If you stop having regular sex, then sex is going to become really painful, really uncomfortable, and something that you dread. So sex naturally drops off. And this is what happens to lots of women over 50, is that sex naturally drops off, especially if you're in a long-term relationship. It's got more to do with that than it has the aging, actually, just being with somebody for a long time. If you stop having sex, everything then does literally fall to bits, because the more you have sex, the more lubricated your vagina is, the more elasticated it is, the better able you are to enjoy sex. So it really is a case of use it or lose it. So sex has so many benefits for the rest of the body, orgasms I'm talking about, not unsatisfactory sex, that it really does keep everything in good running order. So, I mean, the whole thing about that menopause thing was, is the body, if you're having sex, it then thinks it could get pregnant again, so therefore it's going to keep you going. So there's definite, I mean, it makes sense. It's logical, isn't it? If your body's not having sex, your body's going to think, well, I'm not going to use up all this energy on giving myself, you know, ovulating, etc. So I'm not going to do it. So, yeah, I certainly think there's something in that.
What about, so tell us about the sex toy range that you've designed. So this, again, is specifically for older women. Or older couples?
Yes. Well, I've been doing a range of sex toys for ages with Love Honey, and I wanted to do something to coincide with the book, because I thought, well, did you ever watch Grace and Frankie?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. I only watched one, but I know, I mean, that they designed this amazing...
They made their own, didn't they?
They made the yam lube. That's why I just had a mouth of decaf then.
I'll never forget you telling me about the yam lube. It's something that's stayed in my mind.
I didn't know. But they, I mean, everything changes as you're older. Sex can get better, but you don't want to... I mean, an older woman is not going to look at a big rabbit vibrator that's huge and vibrating around and spinning and go, wow, that looks great. You're going to look at that and think, wow, that's going to hurt. Yeah. So I've designed a range which is made of really squishy... It's like it's a layer of silicone on top of liquid silicone. They're one of these toys that you just pick them up and want to play with all day long, like stress toys. And a lot of them are external, so if penetration is uncomfortable, you can use them just externally on the clitoris. They feel great, body safe, look nice, you know, smaller in size. It's, you know, it ticks a lot of boxes. It's not just for older women, by the way. It's for women who find sex uncomfortable generally, which is an awful lot of women. I mean, the statistics on how many women find sex painful or uncomfortable is something like 40% in the UK alone. I mean, it's really frightening. It's horrible.
I find getting the sex... painful.
Do you think as well, though, and I think this again is changing, but there is this perception with some women of like, you know, like everything else is okay in my life, so actually I can kind of, you know, it feels a bit self-indulgent in a way to kind of worry about that side of things.
What, and just give up on sex completely?
Yeah, I do think there is. I mean, I do think that is changing, but that kind of idea of, you know, all this idea that it's somehow, I don't know, wrong as a woman to kind of still admit that you want it.
There's a chapter here as well, chapter 9, how to survive in a sexless relationship.
Yeah, I don't actually really think, I mean, maybe that, yes, I suppose there probably are women who think, you know, should, is it sort of, you know, is it okay for me to still be wanting sex at this age? I mean, of course it is. I mean, look at, I mean, 50 really is the new 40. I mean, look at, I mean, Jennifer Lopez is 50. Have you seen Jennifer Lopez recently?
Oh, I know, phenomenal.
I mean, that's what 50 can look like. In the old days, I mean, people at 45 had the little tight grey perms on their hair and used to wear sensible shoes. That is not the case now. So I can't see, I mean, I suppose people do think, you know, should I still be wanting sex at this age? But I think it's you should, I mean, they reckon that people in their 80s are now having great sex. I mean, it's just getting, we're staying so much younger that sex is a healthy, you know, frequent, satisfying sex life. It's just going to get, you know, we're going to be older and older when we're enjoying it, if you know what I mean, because of the medical advances in how we age.
On that note, you mentioned 80-year-olds still having great sex. And this is kind of is what I mean. I don't know if you saw yesterday, Twitter just lit up about Iris Jones, who is now something of a sexual icon,
wow,
I think
Iris.
It's fair to say. She was on This Morning with Holly and Phil, and she was talking about her plans to marry her 35-year-old Egyptian toy boy.
We're obviously fascinated, as I'm sure is everybody else.
Yeah.
That night...
The first night.
Oh, the first night. Pretty rough. It was rough. Nobody had been near me for 35 years. I thought I was a virgin again.
Oh, really?
Anyway, but can I say what we used? A whole tube of KY jelly?
Oh!
Yeah, you can say that.
And the thing is, I couldn't walk the next day. Yeah, I felt as if I'd been riding a horse. Saddle sore wasn't in it. Anyway, we got over that.
We love Iris.
I love Iris. Do you know...
Oh, my God, I think I'm shell-shocked.
Tracy, that's your next book.
But that's the thing, though, isn't it? It's because of her age. I mean, to be honest, I suppose anyone being that open, even if that was a 20-year-old telling Phil and Holly about KY jelly, would still be a bit taken aback. But the fact that it's an 80-year-old woman makes us gasp even more.
Yeah, of course. I mean, listen, 80-year-old people... When I was writing this book, I mean, I had so many of my younger friends going, oh, the book for old people, oh.
Did they put their head to one side when they did that? Oh, cute.
Yeah, it was very much like that, like an indulgent heads on the side. It was like, listen, I'll tell you, you know, it was just utterly ridiculous. But the fact is, though, I mean, there is a chapter on sexless relationships because there are a lot of women who get to the age of 50 and 60 and say, you know what? I'm done with sex now. It might be that they've just been with their partners so long they're just bored silly. It might be that they just never really enjoyed it. It might be that their sex is just too uncomfortable and it's not that big a priority for them to sort it out, which is fine. And there's no judgment in the book, and there's lots of ways of how to, you know, negotiate a sexless relationship and still keep your partner, which is, of course, the operative thing. It's never a problem. I mean, sometimes, I mean, I know couples who have just decided not to have sex. There are great health benefits to having sex and for your relationship. But if both of you sort of think, you know what, that's okay, that's fine. But it doesn't generally happen like that. One partner tends to go, you know what, I've really had enough of it. And the other one still wants to keep, you know, whizzing around the ice rink, even though the other one wants to hang out their skates. It doesn't really...
I love that analogy.
That's when you get problems.
Oh, Alison's got a new analogy now.
Someone's doing triple axle spins and someone's clinging onto the side.
Tracy, the age thing is hilarious, so I'm glad that Iris was saying that. When I was 40, I remember a man, a potential beau, put it that way, saying to me, but what's sex like at your age?
Oh,
40.
Oh,
I was 40.
Patronising much?
Yeah. So... talking about how important sex is, it's, I mean, again, Love Honey did a report, and it was something like, didn't a third of people say that their mental health is like so positively affected by having good sex? It's, you know, it's that important, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally. So to that end, chapter one, and Tracy says in the book, this is the chapter, of course, it's the opening chapter, but this is the one, four things that will revolutionise your sex life. What are they, Tracy Cox?
Right, put me on the spot. Good job. I have a handy copy of the book. Do you
like
know the funny thing about writing books? That you write the book And then you do the publicity about a year later. And
I can't remember.
I remember what you wrote. It was like a year ago. Right. The first one is, of course, manage your expectations. And I think that is a big factor that people keep saying, well, sex isn't like it was. Of course it was not like it was when you were in your 20s. It's not going to be like it is in your 20s. It's not necessarily a better sex when you're younger or a better sex when you're older. It's just different sex. It's much, it's less spontaneous. It's much more, it's less penetrative, which is usually good for women because we have our orgasms through the clitoris, of course. So that's a big deal. Excuse me. Stop worrying about orgasms. This is something that we should do at all ages because it's all very orgasm-driven, and the fact is when you get older, older couples, you sort of embrace the way their bodies are going. You spend more time on foreplay. You have, like, bite-sized bits of sex that don't necessarily end up with both of you having an orgasm in that sort of tick-tick fashion. Start having sex or keep having sex, which we talked about, the use it or lose it thing, which is absolutely crucial for anyone over the age of 40, really. And talk about sex. You must talk about sex. That's the thing that surprised me the most about writing the book, was the amount of couples that I know really well who have this fantastic relationship. They talk about everything else in their life, but just decided to take sex off the table, and neither of them have mentioned it. Mm. None of them. I mean, and that is dangerous. That's dangerous. Even if there's a moment where you both look at each other and go, you know what, that's interesting, we'll stop doing that, at least it's acknowledged. It must be acknowledged. It's got to be talked about. Then fine, but you must talk about it. It really is important.
So, Ali, I'm going to say what I always say when someone says this. Tracy, it's so hard to do, though, isn't it?
It's not, you know, what's hard to do is that first conversation. Once people get over that first conversation, which is excruciatingly embarrassing, or it needn't be, but people feel like that, the minute you start talking, it's like, why didn't we talk about this ages ago? It's just that initial conversation that's difficult.
Can I do it in a tweet? No, pardon? You can't. No. She wants to tweet it. I don't think you can tweet it, text it,
darling,
or email it. No, post it.
What you can do, if you really are embarrassed about talking face-to-face, if talking's not your strong thing, write it down. It's perfectly acceptable to hand somebody a letter, a personal handwritten letter, and say, I'm too embarrassed to say this to you. Can you read this letter? You know, with them. Don't walk off. But, I mean, sit there with the person, and then they can read it.
But once you make it a thing...
Yeah.
Doesn't that almost make it even harder? Like,
no.
You mentioned, again, and maybe it's the managing expectation things, but, you know, you have this idea that you want it to be spontaneous. If you've made it a thing and you've had that conversation, then it all just gets a bit, we think we should.
False. Seriously. It already is a thing. It's the elephant in the room. If you don't talk about it, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And the more you avoid talking about it, the more you avoid sex. I think if you haven't had sex for like 2 years, the likelihood of you restarting sex with your partner without a conversation is virtually zero. Right? So you have to confront it. You have to talk about it. It's not going to... And acknowledging that it's a thing, it's silly. It is already a thing. Just by saying, look, we're having problems. You are having problems. It's not going to make it worse. It's going to make it better.
See, this is why Tracy is so brilliant.
Yes,
so
say it like it is, love.
Hey, Tracy, you noticed at the beginning about the attitude is a really... I love that. Tell us more about that. How do you kind of embrace that?
Sorry, which bit? The attitude?
When you're saying about attitude is as important as taking HRT or, you know...
Yes, because they've done... another person, if you like, the way I approach sex is called Emily Nagoski. I don't know if you've heard of her. She wrote Come As You Are. And she did
a... Of course she
brilliant,
did. Great title.
She did a huge... I think she did, or some other research, did a huge, really big study of women who'd had menopause, had gone through all the... Like, really bad menopause, actually, and gone through severe changes with hormones, and looked at a group of women who were still having good sex at the end of it and women who weren't having good sex at the end of it, and it had nothing to do with their hormone level drops. It had to do with how they approached it. Like, if they really wanted to keep having sex, they found ways around it. So it's very much your attitude. I mean, if you're over 50 and you're not really keen on sex anyway, you're trying to find any excuse, you're going to say, you know what, oh God, you know, this really affected me, and you're going to feel lack of desire because it's justifying what you want to happen anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the whole confirmation bias thing happening. If you really, really enjoy sex and you don't want to let that go, you will find ways to keep it going. The other thing we need to move away from, which isn't popular, is we need to move away from this thing that desire is the only motivation for sex. It isn't the only motivation for sex. making your partner happy is a motivation for sex. Like, actually having some intimacy with your partner could be a motivation for sex. The health benefits is a motivation for sex. It's not, you know, we have this very much, excuse me, I've got a real frog in my throat, very much this thing that women should only have sex when they're absolutely frothing at the mouth for it. Well, that's false. And it's naive. No one in a long-term, anyone in a long-term relationship knows that you have sex sometimes when you don't actually feel like it, just to please your partner, same way they did with you. So it's there's, you know, we have to move away from a lot of things that are really ingrained in us that we hang on to, we don't want to let go of.
So what about this idea of scheduling it in? Are you an advocate of that?
I am an advocate, and I can tell you that by example. Sundays are about the only time that my partner and I get time where we have the house to ourselves. It sounds like we're a household. We've only got a stepdaughter, but she feels like a household. But Sundays are our sex day. And
everybody
knows, God, I better not call in today. We've got those, what those interrupts
is. Hang on. So is this before, after, or during church?
Yeah. Before the roast? After?
Oh, no, we have a roast. We have a roast as well. Can you believe that? I'm so boring, honestly. So boring. People think I'm swinging from the shafts, but I'm not. So we schedule it in, and we look forward to it, and we think about things to do and what we're going to do and plan it. And look, and to, you know, spontaneity is great, but spontaneity doesn't tend to happen once you've been with somebody for a few years. It really doesn't. Forget what you see on TV. It doesn't happen. Anticipation is just as good as spontaneity, and that's what you have to work on.
There's another chapter which I love the sound of as well, chapter 11, 50. I don't know why I keep saying the chapter numbers. It's like I'm proving I can read. 50-something and single. Because a lot of this advice is great when you're in something and you can actually talk to the, you know, your partner, and that's kind of something you can both negotiate together. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm wondering, is there still a prejudice against that the number of 50, the age of 50, when it comes to dating?
I don't know. I mean, I think in lots of ways, yes. I mean, particularly if you are 50. I mean, what I find extraordinary about being over 50 and dating, and remember, I found my husband, my second husband, when I was 50. So, and I was single for a long time
in
my late 40s.
So although I imagine when you're on a first date and you introduce yourself as a sex expert, that helps. No?
One thing that does make me laugh is I, in my house, I've got this big bookshelf that's got all my foreign issues of my sex and some of my sex toy samples and stuff like this. And honestly, one of my girlfriends calls it the wall of deflation. She said, men must just look at that and their erections just go down when they see it. No, my husband was fine. But being, I mean, it is easier. I interviewed lots of women for the book, and lots of women over 50 said to me, it is easier over 50 to pull a hot young guy than it is a guy of your own age. Men of your own age think of you as unattractive. Young guys don't. It's very, very strange. And yet the guys who think of you as unattractive when you're like hot, good looking, successful, deeply unattractive men, big pot bellies, who think that somehow because you're over 50, you're unattractive. It's a very strange thing that women of over 50 seem to be less attractive to men over 50 than younger men.
I have a theory. Yeah. So my thing about the younger men finding old women attractive, Tracy Cox, Alison Ferns, is I think, go back to social media. I think it's a great leveler. I think people care about what you're saying. If you're funny, if you're smart, if you're talented, if you know, if you have the same politics, less about your age, and that kind of takes away a few prejudices, you know, that are already established there. I think what we were saying earlier, 50 doesn't look how 50 looked. So if we're going just on that aesthetic, you know, that there's nothing to kind of be scared of there. Hopefully, the younger generation of men have been raised by women that teach them that women of every age are relevant and visible. And I do think younger generation men see women as individuals. I think they see the age less, and I think not all men are age my age, but I mean, I'm younger men seem to approach me more than men my own age.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because and I think you've said this to me before as well, and I've certainly heard it from other people, a lot of these dating sites, men say who are 50, when they say what they're looking for, it's always women in a much younger age range.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And, I mean, there's a write-off rant from me in the book, actually, about how we got to this age where, how we got to this state where women are seen as unattractive once they're past a certain age, and that somehow a youthful face is less, is more attractive than a face that, you know, that's got experience. And, I mean, and we're really bad in the Western world in that we you know, we absolutely, everything, the worst compliment you can give somebody is you're looking old, or she looks her age, or something like that, isn't it? Yet in other cultures, it's not, you know, old age is seen, you know, older people are seen as wise. They're seen as people you can learn from. They're seen as people you respect, not like, well, you're dried up and push you aside and let's all get big lips and breasts, or, you know, look like the Instagram generation, which, what is that all about? I mean,
well,
I'm
a lot of that surgery makes those poor girls look 10 years older than they are anyway, doesn't it?
And all look the same.
And look the same. There's something about, I mean, I totally agree. I think there's something so beautiful about an older face, like warmth and experience and just beauty.
And maybe it's the experience thing.
Well, confidence, super confidence.
That works for the younger men because they're looking at you thinking, oh, she can teach me.
Well, when I've interviewed
in the bedroom.
Alison, you look so excited when you were looking at me then. But when I've interviewed younger men about this, they will say, and this is no disrespect to younger girls, but they just say that because I was this when I was younger. I'm full of anxiety now, but they're so full of anxiety that actually I'm going to say an easier ride, and I'm going to regret saying that, but it's an easier ride when it's older women.
Yeah, of course it is. And it's less, I think older women are not scared to direct, and I think younger men, I think all men appreciate direction, because they, you know, how do they know what they're doing? It's the women's sexuality is far more complex than males. Yeah. And if women don't direct them, and it's also not just complex, it's individual. Like, what works for Mary is not going to work for Martha, and it's, you know, and so, and whereas what works for one guy tends to work for another. It's much more specific and individual, I think, with women. And I forgot my point now. I was going rambling off about something about younger men, confident. Oh, yes. And also, you know, directional, and also they're not people pleasy in bed. Like, in when you're young, you're very much about him. Is he going to find me attractive? Is he going to think I'm sexy? And, you know, is he going to be happy with me at the end of this? Will he still want to see me at the end of this? Whereas now, you know, as an older woman, you're like, hang on a minute. If I'm going to get sex, I'm going to make sure I have an orgasm and that I get what I need. It very much reverses. It's less about him and much more about you. And I think men like that.
This is so exciting. What time on Sundays do you have sex?
Don't pop round, Phoebe. Ooh, they don't want to see you.
It varies. That does vary. And not to say that we don't have sex another time, but that is the day. And sometimes we don't have sex. It's just a day for us. And people hate it. They just go, oh, God, I'd hate that. You know, then it's all pressure. It's like, no, it's not. It's just a day that we have together.
That's lovely.
You know,
and something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Can we talk about horny goat weed?
Oh, I wish you'd prepared me for that.
Well, I was hoping you could tell me, Tracy, what it is. Well, apparently, I was reading that is what they recommend for libido issues.
Really?
I think its proper name is Epimedium, but it's known colloquially as horny goat weed. I mean, do you think there's anything in that kind of taking stuff? No.
I absolutely don't. I think it's all, I mean, remember that whole thing when the oysters were meant to make you, you know, it's all people just trying to get headlines and clutching at straws. It'll mean that, you know, because it's like chocolate produces the same,
endorphin
rush that sex does. No, I don't believe in any aphrodisiac. I really don't. I'm sure that certain things will help production of hormones that perhaps could lead to desire, or, you know, better lubrication or things like that. I'm sure there are things that are good for you sexually, but no, I wouldn't advocate any
exercise.
Of those things.
I started walking and I'm getting the endorphin rush, so even exercise must be, because that makes you feel better, look better, and then like, yay.
Exercise is really important, because as you get older, it's all about blood flow. That's the main problem with most things, is blood flow. That's what reduces, like, sensitivity. That's what causes the wobbly erections, all that sort of stuff. So exercise, A, makes you feel better, keeps you in good shape so you've got the energy and stuff for sex, and keeps your head clear. It's so important. That is really important. That's almost as important as having regular sex. Well, probably more, isn't it, really?
And we're talking about, and also you're saying erections there. There's a chapter there as well about how to have hot sex without an erection. Because we've talked a lot about stuff for women over 50, but men too have their issues.
Oh, gosh. And honestly, I think that women generally cope better with all the things that are happening to us, because we've always had to, haven't we? We've had periods, we've had all sorts of stuff. We have to have smear tests. Men tend not to have to suffer this sort of indignity until they get to the age of 40 plus, really. And then, because they're not used to going to the doctor asking for advice. When an erection doesn't happen when they want it to, it is an absolute psychological catastrophe for most men. They don't know what to do with themselves. They really don't. In fact, I'm doing a show today on my radio show talking about erectile dysfunction and just what a problem it is. With most men would rather not have sex at all than talk to their partner about not being able to get an erection on cue, which is stupid because we talk about every other part of aging with our partners, but not this. So that is a big, big issue. And there's a lot in there on how to talk to your partner. Because if you're with somebody, if you're over the, with a guy who's over the age of 45, who used to love sex and all of a sudden is avoiding it and won't talk to you, women think it's an affair. It's generally not an affair. It's generally because he's having erection problems.
Whoa. Mm. So what can they do? I know there's an app. There's an app that apparently kind of trains you a bit.
An app?
Yeah, I might be lying.
I heard of Viagra. I never heard of an app.
I think there is an app version. I've heard about this. There's an app, and I can't remember what it's called. And it kind of gives you like men training techniques.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking it up.
As much as we should be doing Kegel exercises, so should men. That can help a lot. And Viagra isn't the only solution at all. It can help a lot if the problem is blood flow. If it's not blood flow, then it's not going to help at all. So there's lots of other things that you can do. I mean, the first thing to do mainly is move sex away from penetration intercourse and into more foreplay and stuff like that, which most women are very happy to do. What also is a problem with erectile dysfunction is often what happens in a long-term relationship is that you get women matched with men, and then as nature comes on, her vagina gets drier, his erections get more wobbly, and nature's figured it out. It's like, great, so these people won't have to have penetrative sex. But what happens is then the guy finally takes himself off to the GP or goes online, even worse, gets some Viagra, and suddenly you've got this rock-hard, you know, rock-god penis teamed with an aging, dry vagina, which is not a good combination.
No. You weren't lying. There is an app.
Thanks, Alison.
It's called Fire Up Your Sex Drive. It's an app that promises
they need to work on that.
Yeah. it promises that after 20 days of using this app, your sexuality will be enhanced by more than 85%. The effect, they say, is close to that of Viagra. The app allegedly makes a kind of high-frequency alpha wave to synchronise with your own brain wave.
Oh, dearie me. Do you have to pay for this app?
You do. $2.99 if you're interested.
Do you know, there was a big thing. Did you read the thing in the Times with that where they are looking at, and very successfully, electroshock therapy and things like that. Not electric shock therapy, but shock waves, exactly what that app's trading on, to do with erectile dysfunction and repairing it. And it is incredibly successful, but it's not available for $2.99. You have to go to Sweden to this clinic that is trialing it. And I mean, so there is something in that. There very much will be in the future something in that. But no.
So is erectile dysfunction invariably psychological?
Pardon?
Is erectile dysfunction invariably psychological? So it's about
blood
flow.
No.
So it's just
Impotence is when you when it's psychological reasons.
Right.
Well, it can be. No, I'm sorry, that's not quite true. Erectile dysfunction can be any issue. It can be physical or mental reasons for not being able to get an erection. So it's generally both. And aging penises, by the way, are different than erectile dysfunction. They're just called aging. But we tend to think if somebody can't get an erection, it's erectile dysfunction. It's not. It's just called an aging penis. So there you go.
My therapist yesterday said something to me about that men's testicles get really low.
Yeah, they do.
Were you discussing that came up in conversation? What? I feel for your therapist.
I hope they're getting support.
I
remember one of my first things. Don't you remember Nick Nolte very openly came out and said that he'd had a testicle lift? And I remember just thinking, oh,
what?
My God. That was years ago. I was only about 18.
I'm Googling again. She's back on the search engine.
Nick Nolte was so delicious. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I wonder what he's like now with his nice tight
with his pert.
Wow. I didn't even know that was a thing.
But why do they drop in the way that boobs do, like gravity?
Yeah, it's just gravity.
It's just gravity, Alison. Google gravity, Alison.
Oh, they call it scrotal tightening.
Oh, how delicious.
That's its technical term.
Well, you just put some deep heat on it and it would just shrimp. Oh.
Wow.
We mustn't mock. Isn't it interesting that we mustn't mock? That's the name of my new podcast. We mustn't mock.
Do not mock.
Then it's an hour of non-stop. Isn't it interesting that the whole the patriarchal society that has got, you know, that has kind of, you know, affected women so much that we feel like we're less if we're over 50, it's actually really impacting on men to the extent that they can't go and get help because they feel they're less if they don't have a
Yeah.
Tied hard on or tied ball bag.
And point four in the beginning of the book is talk. You have to talk. You have to talk about these things. And like you said earlier about this book seems to be a lot about people in couples. Well, it's not, actually, because it's got a singles bit. I mean, if you can't have sex with your partner, you need to be having regular sex with yourself. So there's lots of chapters on how to keep yourself sexual when you're not with somebody. And then there's a whole chapter on, which we haven't touched on, is that it's called Women Don't Have a Low Libido, We're Bored, which is all about how all the myths about women, that we like monogamy, that we like more vanilla sex, that we... It's absolutely not true at all. Women are the ones that need variety because we get very, very bored sexually so easy. So women who you know, give us great, erotic, interesting sex, and we'd be at it all the time. Women just get very bored by routine sex because we tend not to orgasm. Men do, so there's less reward for us. And we just need... We're far more interested in all the dodgy side of sex than men are, quite frankly.
The dodgy side.
Never allowed to go there.
So what do you do if you're bored?
You talk to... Well, if you're with somebody, if you're not with somebody, you get out there and start having...
Dodgy sex, as you just put it.
Or you learn fantasy and explore porn, maybe, if you're on your own and just having trouble finding a partner. And if you're with your partner, there's a whole thing in that chapter about baby steps, bigger steps, further steps. I mean, wanderlust, midlife wanderlust is something that can happen, where women can suddenly be not that fussed about sex, suddenly get to this age, a bit like the pregnancy hormonal thing, and just suddenly be rampantly looking around at everybody and seeing everybody as a potential sex partner. So that can happen as well. So, I mean, and along with this courage and confidence that you get when you're older, you can suddenly, you know, any in a relationship or out of a relationship, just think, you know what, actually, I've always fancied a bit of that. I've always wanted to sleep with a woman, or I've always wanted to go to a swingers club, or I've always wanted to do this. Why not?
Thank God we're in our 50s now.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? So that even 5-10 years ago
would have been very different.
Very different.
Oh, completely different. But when you think about my mum, who's now 84 and quite out there and pretty good, she
she's not Iris, is she?
My dad left.
She's not called Iris, is she?
No, absolutely not. But my mum, at the age of 50, I think had her first orgasm at the age of 50.
Have you had that conversation?
Because she told me, and the thing is, because I'd written this book, she started to, and then she embarked on this affair with this German guy, and oh my God, I remember going down the pub in Sydney with her, I was living in Australia at the time, and I just took myself off to the loo, and I just sit in the toilet and just think, oh my God, she's getting up to stuff that I've still not got up to. And I was just shocked. Amazing. And she kept saying, well, it's so lovely, darling, that I can talk to you about these things. And I was thinking, oh, my God.
And you're sticking your nails in your palms, like, Mum.
And she was pretty. And I remember at that time, that was pretty progressive of my mum. But Mum did look quite young for her age and was very young for her age and still is, kind of. But I remember thinking then, God, really, people at that age meant to be doing this stuff back then? So, yeah, it wasn't that long ago that you really did think of 50-year-olds as old grannies, really, in our heads, wasn't it? Mm.
Oh, my, I'll never learn, will I? Do you remember last week when I started Googling vaginal masks?
Oh, Tracy, please
facial. You know what?
Vaginal facial masks. You know those sheet masks that you get for your face?
Yeah,
you can
now
get them for down below. Anyway, I made the mistake of Googling and came up with actual masks that people would wear, like with a trick or treat at Halloween.
Yeah.
Look like vagina.
Oh, dear.
Well, of course, today, having not learnt from the mistakes of last week, I've now put in scrotal tightening. And I'm now reading an article about ball ironing. Apparently, it's the hottest thing in Hollywood.
Well, I bet, no doubt.
Oh, dearie me.
Yeah,
who does it?
It's some sort of spa treatment to smooth out wrinkles down there.
So it's
for
not
gentlemen.
Like a home help.
No.
I mean, how stupid are people? Of course, the wrinkles are going to. Like, you could probably get rid of them for about 5 minutes, but the minute he's walked outside, they're going to come back.
Exactly. It's like bed sheets. It's just, there's no point ironing them.
No point.
Have you thought about the next book, Tracy? This would be book 18, would it be?
Book 8. Yeah, well, this is 17, so yeah, that would be book 18.
Wow.
Do you know what? I used to write 2 books a year, as well as do radio and TV and God knows what else, and I'd never have time to enjoy the publicity. And this year, I'm determined, because it's been bought by America, it's been bought by Germany and other markets are interested. and say, for once in my life, I'm going to enjoy the publicity where I can go to America and enjoy the publicity, and rather than be at home trying to fit in another book. And also, I don't know what... So any ideas from you guys on what to write on? My publishers were keen on female masturbation, but I don't... I think that's a thing, but I don't think I'd want to read a whole book about it.
Mm. Leave this with us, Tracy Cox.
We'll give it some thought.
We'll give it some thought.
Yes, you can come up with some... Yes, if
do
anyone
a pop-up.
Can come up with
do
some
a pop-up
ideas,
sex
you
book.
Can.
A pop-up sex book.
Pop-up or a scratch and sniff.
Oh, no.
Come on.
Testicle tightening.
Testicle tightening.
There you go. There you go.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. If people want to get hold of the book, just remind us of the title.
It's called Great Sex Starts at 50.
And if people want to find out more about you in general, the website?
Just tracycox.com.
Amazing. Listen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tracy.
And send our love to your mum. Take care. Wow. She's fabulous, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, brilliant. A brilliant journalist, brilliant author, amazing.
I'm still not sure I could have a conversation like that with my mum about her sex life. It is something to be applauded that older women are able to talk now about the fact they want sex. Can we listen to Iris
one more time?
Once again,
yeah.
I think I've fallen in love with Iris.
We're obviously fascinated, as I'm sure is everybody else.
Yeah.
That night.
The first night.
Oh, the first night. Pretty rough.
Doesn't it was get old. Rough.
Nobody had been near me for 35 years. I thought I was a virgin again.
Oh, really?
Anyway, but can I say what we used? A whole tube of KY jelly?
Oh.
Yeah, you can say that.
And the thing is, I couldn't walk the next day. I felt as if I'd been riding a horse. Saddle sore wasn't in it. Anyway, we got over that.
Oh, we love Iris. So
we need the interview with the man.
Well, yes, but he, I think, is still in Egypt.
hang on.
I know. And that's my only concern with this story. It's one of those, isn't it, where you think, I really hope this does have a happy ending. I don't know. Yes, she met Mohammed Ibrahim in Cairo. And then she went home, and then they've been like chatting and video calling and what have you, and apparently he's now proposed to her.
Wow.
After 15 days of knowing each other. Oh no, hang on, no, I've got it the wrong way around. They hadn't actually met in person, so they were just chatting online, and then he proposed to her, so she decided to fly to Cairo to meet him. So they met at the airport, and then they had that first encounter.
Did they have subsequent? Oh, yeah, she said they got over it.
Yeah.
Are they still a thing?
Well, that's what I'm trying to find out. I didn't see the whole interview. We need to find out. I hope it works out.
Were you impressed with Holly and Pip?
Well, they looked shocked, didn't they? Mm. I mean, it's probably the first time KY Jelly's been mentioned on an episode of This Morning.
Do you know, I bet it's not.
You don't think, actually... you're probably right. I tell you what did make me laugh, and he doesn't often make me laugh, but you know, it was the NTAs last night, the television awards.
Did we win?
No, we didn't, sadly. But Holly and Phil did, and Piers Morgan was quite upset about that, and apparently sent a message, a rather risque message to Holly Willoughby saying, "I hope you stocked up with enough lube to stick your NTA where the sun don't shine." But Holly took it all in her stride. She replied, "That just made me laugh out loud. If you were that funny on the telly, you might win one." Mic drop. Holly Willoughby won. Piers Morgan, nil.
She's got very, very glossy hair for blonde hair. Blonde hair often doesn't have the shine.
Oh, she's got the shine. It's, well, doesn't she do an advert for some sort of hair brand, which we won't mention? But the other person we were going to talk about, as well as Iris, then, was this woman I mentioned at the start of the show. So this is a local councillor. She was going to come on the programme, but she couldn't make it. But very interesting and very brave of her, I think, to be so open, particularly if you hold kind of public office.
Why
in that way
was she? And this was in the Mail.
This was in the Mail.
That's never going to go well.
So let me read you the start of the article.
Yeah.
On nights out with my girlfriends, there comes a point in the evening where I consciously keep quiet. That moment, after a couple of glasses, when the floodgates open and they animatedly discuss hot flushes, sleeplessness, lethargy and night sweats. I can't join in with all this menopause-related chatter, though, because despite being 59, I'm yet to go through the dreaded change. I still have periods. I've never experienced a hot flush, never mind any other symptom of hormonal change. It's long puzzled me why I've seemingly dodged the bullet. So last week's research, which said regular sex might help to defer the menopause, was nothing short of a revelation. At last, I think I know what's been going on, because the years when I might have expected to go through the menopause were taken up with a passionate affair.
Wow.
So what happened was, she went to Epsom to a country clothing store. It's the place to go. And that's where she first met Jack. She was 49. He was 39.
Oh, right. So 10 years then.
Anyway, she only went in to buy a barber jacket. Mm. But from the moment she walked in, Jack couldn't take his eyes off her. As she left the store, he said with a cheeky grin, "Perhaps I can take you out for dinner sometime." She writes, "He was far from my usual sporty dark haired type. He was blonde with bright blue eyes and he seemed a typical suit, corporate, buried in paperwork. But after having such terrible luck with men, I was flattered, so I scribbled down my number. I never dreamed it, but this first meeting would lead to the most profoundly caring and fulfilling relationship I've ever had. Jack and I were very passionate. Every time we met, I would be on a high. I felt like a teenager with a bounce in my step, sometimes quite literally as I'd leap into his arms when I saw him." Anyway, the relationship continued. They spent passion-packed long weekends in France, Holland, Scotland, Ireland.
All the places.
Got around a bit. And when they were apart, which was rare, they kept in constant contact by text and phone. This is the line I like. "Jack made me feel sexy whether I was in wellies or a negligee." And while some of that was sheer chemistry, I mean, what about both?
Both, exactly. Come on, live a little.
"I could almost feel the air crackle when we were together. Part was surely down to how thoughtful and attentive he was from the moment I met him. Their first date was in a pub. He chose in Amberley Village, West Sussex. Love a local mention. When he said, 'I want to know everything about you,' as they held hands across the table."
They held hands on the first date.
Yeah. Now that goes back to your thing though, doesn't it? About why it would appear younger men are attracted to older women in a way that men the kind of same age as older
and
women
this,
aren't.
And this hold hand thing is weird. And the reason I did a little gasp is, so I remember going on a date with someone who was about 3 years younger than me. So my kind of age. And I'd had... you know that I get quite altered after even just one glass of wine.
Oh, yes.
You know, I can't.
Altered is one word for it. So I went out on Friday night and got completely so altered. Oh, I was altered.
And I think I'd had two, so I was extremely altered. And I went in for a little kiss.
Yeah.
And he went, and he recoiled. Yeah. And
no.
This, rejected this. And then went, "We're two middle-aged people kissing in a pub." And I was so embarrassed. And then, so younger men, again, there's more... It's not like that. It's more
PDA. But do you think they're less cynical as well?
Yeah.
They're less... Yeah. I don't know. It's, less damaged.
I think was... Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen eventually, sure.
Yeah.
But I think as well with men, like, say, my age, I'm not older than you, men my age, of course, there are some fantastic men my age, but there is something about men seem allowed to get older. So women who are 50 might want to slow down, but actually, because you're almost kind of fighting against the prejudice that is there already, you don't. Whereas men, it's kind, they're allowed to get older, so they kind of go a bit more the pipe, slippers, sofa route.
Let themselves go.
And women still have to keep their vim, vigour and boobs up. Mm. Everything has to still be, you know, a little bit more vital. So I don't know if that kind of attitude then follows through, that actually you're then attracting like, and you're attracting people that still are interesting and interested and want to just get involved in life.
Mm. On that note, yes. I think we're out of time.
Thank you, Ali. Did I sound okay today?
You sounded fabulous.
Did I?
Shall we end with a song? And if so, which song?
Okay. I'd like to sing... another song.
No. Yes, what song? I tell you what, we need a song by somebody who is in their 50s who is a sexual icon.
Oh, don't say Madonna.
No, that's too predictable. Who are the kind of sexual icons? 50
singers.
Plus?
Singers.
Well, see, I suppose, you're like, I'm thinking, I like,
Jane Fonda, Joanna Lumley, but I don't believe they've ever released a single. I might be wrong.
Helen Mirren, Annie Lennox.
Annie Lennox.
Come on.
Let's go.